on the AM and FM 947 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there riding the ride of roller coaster fun of being an entrepreneur. We have a fantastic show for you today, and I am really excited, and I think you will learn a lot. Brady Sticker is with us. He is a marketing expert with a niche, and you know I love the niches because that's where the riches are. He specializes in church marketing, building new churches, getting dying churches to rebound, anything in the religion space. Fascinating how he got into that niche and what he's doing with it now. I think you will be really, really impressed. He has to deal with all of the normal issues, branding, value, competition, all of that. Resale value, believe it or not. It is just fascinating. After that, Justin Sachs is with us as a greatest hits repeat, getting him up on the new server. Justin built a publishing company, I think starting very young. I don't remember, 21 or something like that. And we filmed this right before his honeymoon. So it was a fun interview. I love what he has to share and his advice on getting books published and all of that. So it's a great show. We're going to get started in just a second with Brady. We are back. And again, thank you so much for being with us. You know, one of my favorite expressions is that there's riches in the niches. I just love that. And I love the idea that as entrepreneurs, we should be looking at niches in a very, very special way. My next guest has done that maybe better than anyone else. Please welcome Brady Sticker to the show. He is the founder and CEO of a company called Church Candy Marketing that is specializing in building new churches. I think he's built 1,000 churches or something. I saw that number. He also has a new book out called Launch Big, the complete digital marketing guide for church planters. Build your launch team, launch big, and get new guests every Sunday. Brady, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Jim, I'm doing fantastic.
I, in a million years, had never thought that there was a church planter, a church marketing guy. It just never occurred to me.
Yeah, man. Like you said, there's riches in the niches. Myself, I was on staff at a church. I helped my church with some social media things. It really blew up. And then my DMs just got flooded with other pastors wanting help with the same thing. And that's kind of how our business got started.
Very cool. Do you have competition?
Believe it or not, we do. I've been very good at marketing myself in the church world, and that has almost stemmed more competition. There were a couple of people doing social media and website things for churches before myself. But we've unfortunately created some of our competitors.
I did that too with my first business. And you still see the signs of it. You ever driven, I mean, you might be involved, driven past a church and they have Lego camp coming and all those tech camps that are around now.
Yeah.
I started that.
Wow.
You know, I ended up with 89 camps around the country and 15,000 kids every day.
And you guys would host these in schools and churches and things like that?
MIT, Georgetown, UCLA, Stanford, SMU, we were at Rice in Houston. You're in Houston, aren't mm-hmm. you?
Yeah, I'm in Houston.
We were at Rice there.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's awesome,
very,
man.
Very similar to what you're doing, just a niche that no one had thought of. So when I think about your business, I think about Charles Stanley. You know the name?
Yeah, I know that name.
He was one of the big time TV guys and had a place here in Atlanta, huge, gorgeous downtown church. And it came out that he had not been living with his wife for 20 years or something. He'd been living in the guest house. And his son broke off, Andy, and we went with Andy and watched that church grow. It became a 1,000-person church almost overnight. And it was really interesting. And it was interesting to watch Andy disappear. You know, he used to be very accessible and all around, and now you can't get within 100 feet of him. It's just interesting to watch it grow. It's kind of sad, though. We don't go to church there anymore because you can't get anywhere near him now. And it's all political. There's just so much people involved in God's business. You know, that's what I hate about church, is there's so many people involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, I've got some friends that have stepped away from faith and stepped away from church, and they blame church hurt. And because of that, they don't believe in God anymore. And what I tell them is
church hurt.
Church hurt is whenever you're hurt by the church, you're upset with the politics, you're hurt, upset with the people, like, and hey, someone did you wrong. Yeah. Yeah. And what I often tell them is like, look, you know, we serve a perfect God, but the church is ran by imperfect people.
Very true. So do you deal with new churches or do you help grow existing or both?
Yeah, so we work with new churches and existing churches. A new church is what you would call like a church plant. So these are like, think of like tech startups, like new companies, but instead of businesses, they're churches. And there's actually a lot of different church planting networks that help start new churches. You know, because you think there's a lot of little suburbs and developing areas across the country, and you know, these places don't have churches, and so this is where these church planters will come in and start a church in a city that's seeing a lot of growth and development. So we work with a lot of those guys. And that's what the book Launch Big is all about, is how to use social media and digital to, you know, reach people with a new church. And then we work with some churches that are 50, 100 years old. Those people, you know, those churches need social media too, just as much as the new guys.
Yep. And it would seem to me, and I don't mean this as a negative thing, it seems to me, Brady, that everything you're doing is what we're talking about for any entrepreneur. You mentioned Silicon Valley tech startups. You are doing the exact same thing, right? Isn't that true?
Yeah, man. And
you're
in fact,
100% in helping these churches become entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that. I get a lot of pushback from people in the church world that say the church isn't a business. It shouldn't be treated like a business. And while I agree with them in some aspects that, you know, churches shouldn't be all about profits and the bottom lines of budgets, while that is an aspect of running any organization, you know, what we focus on is, I tell people we take online views and turn them to butts and pews, using social media ads to make that happen. And so that's applicable to businesses, churches, really anyone. You can use, the tools that we have today at our disposal to grow your organization, whether it's a business or a nonprofit like a church.
All right. So do you go in and try to brand the preacher and figure out a shtick, a unique selling point for him? This guy is so funny. You're going to love, he tells jokes every other minute. Do you go through what I would go through when I was launching a new product?
So we typically don't do that. We try to partner with churches that already have their identity and their brand built. The problem is they just don't know how to get that in front of people. And so we've specialized in social media ad campaigns that will target people that live in their city that are looking for a church. And so one of the things that we do like to do is do specific retargeting campaigns. So this is like when you go to Amazon and you're looking for a new laptop, and then you go to Instagram or Facebook and you're like, oh my goodness, I keep seeing ads for the laptop I was just looking at. Have you seen stuff like that before, Jim?
Oh yeah, I hate that. I'm convinced that it's what you said, but also if you have Alexa in the house and are talking about birthday presents and blah, 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 you start seeing ads because you're spying on us and you start seeing ads for that.
Yeah,
Alexa
exactly.
Knows you're pregnant before anyone else does.
Right. So we help churches set those up, or we set them up on behalf of churches, ad campaigns targeting people in their city. And we'll do a lot of that retargeting. And because we're working with churches, and people will sometimes maybe over-spiritualize it and be like, man, I just feel like God is calling me to this church because every time I turn around on Instagram, I keep seeing you. And
Brady, that's how do you feel about that?
So here's my perspective on that is we are using the tools available to us, and all we're doing, the Bible talks about planting.
Yep. Believe in that. Yep.
And the Bible talks about planting seeds.
Yep.
And
yep.
So the thing is, all we're doing is just putting the word out about the church. And it's, we know that it's going to be shown to people multiple times, and then we just let Holy Spirit do the rest. And it is crazy that I've had people come up to my church, and like I was used to be a pastor on staff, but now I just do this full time. And they're like, man, Pastor Brady, like I just knew God was calling me here. And I believe him. I said, amen, bro. Like, I believe God is calling you here too. Like I believe God can use social media just like he can use people, just like he can use anything.
Yes, I totally agree. I love your honesty. The coolest thing about being an entrepreneur, Brady, in my opinion, is that it uses the gifts, the basket of skills that God gave you more than anything else could.
Absolutely.
Comment on that for me, please. What are your thoughts on godly entrepreneurship? And the does God like entrepreneurs, Brady?
I would say, yeah, I definitely think God likes entrepreneurs. In the church world, people will get all mad about people that make money, and they'll misquote scripture saying, you know, money is the root of all evil. The thing is, you can do way more, make a way bigger impact with money than without. And you even look at Jesus and the disciples, these fishermen were, in that time, those were business owners that left their family business to go and do ministry. And they had money, right? So much so they said that Judas was the bookkeeper. He kept he kept up with all their finances right then, right? And so as an entrepreneur, you can do so much for the kingdom. And like even me personally, like I've given so much back to different mission organizations and even different churches. I've done way more of that than what I ever could have done if I was just, you know, a pastor on staff at a church making 50 grand a year.
Right. All right. Can we go through some of the tricks in the book that you introduce? For example, the coffee with the pastor and the interest parties, et cetera. Can we go through some of the meat and content?
Yeah, man. So one of the things that we found that works really well for churches is a coffee with a pastor ad. It's essentially where a church planter or a pastor would just record a video inviting someone to grab coffee. They'll say like, hey, my name's Brady. I'm a local pastor in the area. Do you have questions about God? Or do you have questions about faith? I would love to sit down and grab coffee with you, hear your story, and tell you about the church that we're at, and share my story with you. And we essentially run a lead gen campaign, a lead generation campaign on Facebook and Instagram, running that video as an ad, targeting people in the city. And then people that are interested will fill out a form, and they're able to schedule a meeting one-on-one with a pastor. And it's kind of like what you were saying earlier, like whenever you guys were at North Point, with Andy. Right.
Good. I didn't say that, but you remembered.
Oh, yeah. I know ball, man. So North Point grew so much, the pastor's inaccessible. And so whenever people see an ad on social media of a pastor inviting them for coffee one-on-one, that's really enticing. People really like that. And that's been one of the things that's really helped a lot of the churches we've worked with. And that's one of the things that I had to learn as an entrepreneur. That was not my idea. That was actually one of our clients had the idea to run that campaign. And at first, Jim, I told him, I was like, there's no way that would work. You're just some guy in a city. Who would want to go grab coffee with you? Well, luckily we still tried it, because if I was prideful, I'd be like, no, man, we're not going to do that. That's never going to work, which were kind of my thoughts. But I was like, yeah, man, sure, let's run it. And what do you know? It worked really, really well. And that's now one of like the main campaigns we run for these guys.
Interest parties.
Yeah, man. So these interest parties, it's basically a pop-up event where a new church, before they start meeting on Sundays, once a month, they'll have an interest party and they'll rent out a venue like a coffee shop or something like that. And we'll run an event campaign to get a lot of people in the doors and get people to the event for people that are interested in going to the interest party. And so just focused on getting a lot of people in the room, and the church planter will, from their cast vision on what their new church is going to be like, and collect some info from people that are there and follow up with them after that.
Off topic, just a second. Where did candy come from in your name? Church candy. You also used to run Cairo Candy, which I assume is a chiropractic marketing agency.
Yeah.
Why is candy in everything?
Yeah. So my dad started Cairo Candy, and I asked him this a few years back. And he said it was a business name generator. and so there's no significance to it. My dad used
business name generator.
Go to Google and search. Yeah. Like go to Google and search one of those like business name generators.com. Now you can use chat.
Okay.
Yeah. Now you can use ChatGPT for that. But yeah, he was just looking for a name. I think at the time he was just wanting to name his podcast. My dad used to work for a chiropractor doing all their marketing. And so he started the Cairo Candy podcast. And then to monetize it, he started running ads for chiropractors. And that's how the Cairo Candy agency started. And I helped him with that. And while I was helping him with that, I was on staff at a church. Well, I took what I learned from working with my dad and started helping my church out. And then that's kind of how Church Candy was born, is for me just helping my church for free. And then we got a lot of traction there.
Back to our list, direct message outreach.
Yeah, man. One of the things we found is people like talking to people. And so we're really intentional with messaging people one-on-one via text. And there's some different campaigns that churches can do, and then honestly, anyone, any business, any organization can do to get in contact with people. In fact, back in March, Jim, we signed up 100 new clients in 1 month. And I think you're going to like this story, because I told my team, now, for context, we had never signed up more than 60 clients at a time in 1 month. And so I told my team, I was like, guys, Easter's in April, so March is going to be a busy month. A lot of churches want to sign up. If you guys can sign up 100 churches in 1 month, I will let you tattoo whatever you want on my body. And
do you already have tattoos?
I have one, and I almost passed out when I got it, because I got full of anxiety from the fact that this is on my body forever.
And so I have. Do you have a limit on where on your body they could put something?
So Jim, this is where my wife came into play. The stipulation was like the team decides, but like my wife can veto it if it's anything extreme.
Okay. So what did they choose?
And so what ended up happening is the way we were able to get so many clients to sign up is through a messaging campaign. We sent out text messages to old leads we had, letting them know like, hey, Easter's around the corner. And that was the like secret key to getting over 100 clients to sign up back in March. And they ended up choosing.
What was the key? Saying that Easter is coming, or the tattoo?
It was the key was a text message campaign. It was basically just reaching out to old leads. A lot of businesses probably have like an email list or even just a list of old clients that aren't active or whatever it is. And so churches are the same way. And so we'll do this for churches of just people that haven't been in a while, right? We'll run a texting campaign just trying to get them reengaged. We did the same thing for our business. And that is what was the secret to getting 100 clients in 1 month. And now I have a tattoo of Jesus standing over basically death, or like it looks like the Grim Reaper in the there's a famous Muhammad Ali picture where he's like standing over this other guy, just like looking over him intimidated that he like knocked out. And it's to represent Jesus defeated death. So it's like Jesus with boxing gloves. I'll have to send you the photo, but
how big and where?
So it is probably 3 inches tall. And it's on my like tricep area. So luckily when I'm wearing a short sleeve t-shirt, it's covered.
Okay.
So, but yeah, that was one of the things, couple lessons there, come up with a good incentive for your team and, they're going to break records and running a text message reactivation campaign, can be really powerful, engaging old leads in your business. We do that for us and we do that for churches we work with too.
That reminds me of a story. I had just sold a business and I was 32 at the time and started teaching international entrepreneurship at Georgia State. And I was very egotistical, even more than normal. And this is so easy. Anyone could be an entrepreneur. It's just so easy. And my class started pushing back and I made a bet that I could start a business that semester, make it cash flow positive that semester, repay all the startup capital that semester, and they got to choose the country and the industry that I would start a business in that semester.
Oh, gosh.
Right, and this was right after 9/11, so they thought it would be funny to choose a Pakistani company and importing furniture, because I had just done a riff on how furniture is the worst 2% business that there is. And so, excuse me, I had to start a Pakistani furniture company. But if you go on my LinkedIn, everybody, and scroll to the very, very bottom of my experiences, you will see the product. And I dare anyone to say it's not the most beautiful chair they've ever seen. So,
and did you, like, you made a profit from it? Like you ran it successfully, or was this just like a gag?
No, I totally ran it successfully because I rigged it basically, but this is a good rig. It teaches a valuable lesson. Instead of spending $100,000 and having $100,000 to repay, I went out and I think the first order was 17. I bought 17 chairs for, I want to say, $400 each with about $200 each of shipping. And then I would sell them for $2,000. I had sold most of the chairs before they left Pakistan.
Mm.
So I only had to repay like $12,000 or something.
Yeah. So now I did the same thing whenever I was launching our company. I sold before it was like a done for you program, like it is now. I tried to sell it like an online course where I could just record some videos and then sell it. Well, I sold it to pastors before I'd even built the course, just to see if there was interest.
Exactly.
Cause I was getting a lot of pastors DMing me, like messaging me on Instagram and Facebook, asking for help with this. And I was like, hey, you know, this is the program. I basically outlined what the program was. And I was like, it's $500. And once I actually sold it, and I was like, great. It goes live on this date. And then I turned around and I started grinding and I started actually building the product.
I love it. That is beautiful. Beautiful. All right. Don't get a website. Do this instead from our list.
Yeah, man. The problem that I've seen with a lot of church planters is, and this is really any entrepreneur, you want to get started, you want to get things off the ground, and you'll spend hours on a logo or hours and days and weeks just getting your website right. And at the end of the day, you're not doing activity that moves the needle. Like, do you have any friends, Jim, that maybe they want to be entrepreneurs and they're like, oh yeah, like I'm starting this business. And you ask, okay, what have you done so far? And they're like, I've done this, 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 and this. And they're listing things like, oh, I worked on a logo and I did this, but they're not doing anything that's going to like generate income yet. Like they haven't started cold calling. They haven't started doing anything that's going to move the needle and actually like generating revenue. Church planters have the same problem where they will spend hours on a website or all of this when really what they need is a simple landing page that has a form on get more info about our church plant. And that's like the main call to action. And so it's basically, you know, you want to focus on for if I was talking to an entrepreneur, revenue generating activity. But for a church planter, your goal is to get people on your, what you would call a launch team. So you need to spend time on generating, spend time on things that's going to generate new people for your launch team.
Yep. How do you get people to come back, Brady?
How do you get people to come back, man? There's a lot to that. Number one is churches. They got to be friendly. They got to be welcoming. One of the things that we recommend doing is, if you ever refer a church, if they have a grand opening, have another event to point people towards, whether it's a friends and family day or whatever that might look like. So a lot of our churches will have big grand openings, and then they'll tell everyone that comes, like, hey, in 2 weeks, we're going to have this event with bounce houses for the kids and food trucks. So we would love to see you there. Right. So that gives people a reason to come back. And so, like, if a business owner out there is listening, you can take your grand opening that you do, some kind of big event, have your next event already planned and details for that, and push people to that. So there's a reason for them to come back again.
I always asked the girl out on the second date before the first date was over.
There you go.
You know, if the first date's going good, I'm going to go ahead and ask, because she's, you know, wondering, is he going to ask me out again? You know, and what are his intentions? If you go ahead and knock it out, you know, halfway through the first date, makes the second half of the first date go a lot better.
Absolutely.
Brady, I love what you have done, and I love your story. It is just a great one, and I would love to follow your career. How do we keep in touch? Follow online, get a copy of the book, please.
Yeah, online, I'm most active on Instagram. It's just my name, @BradySticker. And then the book is available on Amazon. It's called Launch Big. If you search Launch Big book, it should pop up right there.
Fantastic. Brady, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate you, Jim.
And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question.
And that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio again. Thank you so much for being with us today. I am very excited and honored to introduce you to our guest today. His name is Justin Sachs. He was on the show about 3 years ago, and his background is just amazing. He started off working with people like Tony Robbins and some other people like Mark Victor Hansen, who's absolutely one of my favorites. I love his columns. And at the age of 18, he published his first book. He now has, I think, 6 books out. He's produced 3 movies. He has 5 international bestsellers. He's been featured in MSNBC, CNBC, Fox, Yahoo, all of these sort of places. He is also the owner of Motivational Press, which is one of the top publishing companies out there, and has gotten books published for hundreds of other people. And if you go on the Amazon site for him, he has quotes from people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, President Bush, people like that, who are talking about his amazing accomplishments and what he has been able to do at such a young age. He is also very dedicated to giving back to the community. He's won lots of awards and accolades, including the Prudential Spirit of Community Award for his efforts there. Justin, welcome back to the show. Congratulations on getting married. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing great. Thanks. I'm excited to be with you, and I'm certainly looking forward to sharing a bit with you and chatting further.
Well, I'm just excited that you're getting married. It is the world's greatest and the world's worst thing that can happen to a man. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Talk to us about getting your very first job. I think your first job was working for Tony Robbins, your first real job. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I did a little, like, little stuff, you know, helping the parents around with their work and everything. But the real, you know, my real first job where I got to kind of create my own employment, if you will, was at Tony Robbins. And it was in 2004. It was at a time when, you know, for him, his business was growing really steadily. You know, things were really exciting for him at that time. And I got to see really a lot of transformation occur in the personal development industry as the recession hit and going through that turmoil, you know, where he really took a leading role in guiding and transforming people through those challenges. And then coming out of that on the other side, the industry changed because you really had to focus on online marketing more than ever before. You know, his up until then, he was doing a lot of grassroots, on-the-ground marketing where he would go into corporations and speak and he'd have his team do the same and those types of things. But it stopped working the same way that it used to, which really required a unique new taste of marketing, a new strategy around how to get things done. And so what we like to focus on, I mean, we in our organization look at that all the time of, you know, in times of change, which, in the, you know, I run a book publishing company, we're always in times of change. There's whether we're in ebooks or print books has just changed back again. You know, things are constantly changing in this business. And so for me, it was the perfect lesson way back then to see how quickly you can adapt, change, and grow with the changing economy and with the changing infrastructure that a lot of industries find.
How did you get the job, though? I mean, I bet he had 1,000 applicants for the one position.
Yeah, you know, I say it's kind of a lesson for me and for those that I work with. For me, it was give first. I volunteered for his nonprofit organization and was well-connected within his organization before I ever got hired. You know, and so, you know, it was a great lesson for me on giving before you expect to receive. And it, you know, is something that I think really I've carried with me in my organization for quite a while, is that how important it is, to be focused on giving first, and then everything else seems to just follow organically.
And weren't you like 17 or something at the time?
At the time, I was only 14 at the time. I worked for him for 5 or 6 years till I was 19, and then I started with Mark Victor Hansen following that.
Wow. Unbelievable. And you were going to school at the same time and all of that?
I was. Yeah, I was in high school at the time, so I worked in his office, you know, after school, after high school. And then on the weekends, I was at his events, helping him sell, helping him, you know, train, work in different environments. So it was a great opportunity for me to learn on two sides, right? The traditional education that so many of us, you know, get to experience. And then on the other side, something that was nowhere near the same, right? I mean, for anyone who's been to a Tony Robbins event knows that he believes in giving you as much as you possibly can as far as education goes, as far as value goes, and doing it as quickly as he possibly can. So for us, it was mind-boggling to see how quickly you could learn something in one environment and how long it took to teach in the other environment.
And why in the world did you think at the age of 18 you could publish your own book? I mean, talk to us about the mindset behind that decision. Most 18-year-olds are just trying to get some illegal liquor, and here you are thinking that you can publish a book. Why are you so special, Justin, that you can do this? What's the mindset behind someone who makes that decision?
You know, it's a great question. I was 80% through the book before someone ever said, "Who are you to write the book?" You know, so I was very lucky in that I had already decided to write the book. I'd already written most of it before anyone ever told me I couldn't do it. And when they told me I couldn't do it, the question wasn't so much to say, you can't write a book. It was to say, you better figure out your uniqueness in the marketplace. You better figure out you know, what makes you so special that you think you can tell people what you're trying to tell them? And the question was something I struggled with for a while, as I think most of us do when they try to define what makes them in any business or even personally in their lives. And so going through that process really allowed me to I think in a large respect, open up to the possibilities that, you know, that came along with really being actively focused on growth in my own life and what opportunities that, that meant and made available to others.
Was that Your Mailbox is Full? Is that the first book you did?
That's right. Yeah. Real Teens in the Real World, Your Mailbox is Full. It was one of my favorite books, actually. It's really an incredible read.
Why is that one your favorite? You've done so many other things. Why is that one still have a special place in your heart?
You know, that one, the funny thing is it almost expresses my innocence in the market, right? Because for me, I was brand new to business. I was brand new to the world of authorship. But what I had was a large amount of experience, 7-8 years of experience by that point, in personal development and self-help. And I was lucky enough to have one of the most extraordinary mentors in the world guide me through a lot of that over the course of those first, you know, 5 years. And so for me, it was about as raw as you could get in terms of real hardcore content from personal development, specifically focused for teens. Like there is, you know, I don't think there's a better book in the marketplace for teenagers looking to find what's going to work for them and what's going to create their success. There just isn't anything better out there.
Should I give it to my 18-year-old son, 16-year-old daughter? Is it still relevant to them? You think?
Absolutely. Yeah. Anywhere between, you know, I mean, I've had adults read it and love it, but ultimately it's for kids between the ages of 12 and 22.
Okay, and what would the lesson be that they would take away? What's the thesis?
Well, it's written in a way that every day you can read one page and take something different. So whether one day it's goal setting, another day it's time management, another day it's avoid drugs and alcohol, another day it's, you know, you name it. There's so many different lessons that you take, and every day the goal is that you read a page a day for 150 days. 6 months you're living in a different way, or you have a different perception of how you live your life. It talks about the types of words that you use. The words you use influence the way you live your life. And the questions that you ask and how important those are. So it incorporates so many different lessons. And we tried to really give a taste of most of the major lessons you'll get in any personal development seminar, all packaged into a really unique and crazy book that allows teens to take it in a different way than if they were reading, you know, a lengthy book called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People or something like that.
Right. How do you decide what to write about next? And I'm particularly interested in the incredibly broad spectrum of things you've written about. You've written about philanthropy. You've written about sales. You've written about persistence, customer loyalty. You just did a book earlier this year on innovative women and top female entrepreneurs. Such a broad spectrum there, Justin. How do you decide what's next?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because for me, it's the reason I said I like the first book best is because that was what I really wanted to write about. You know, the rest of the books that I've written really have been finding a hole in the marketplace, finding somewhere where people really need a certain message. You know, women need to hear about the powerful business leaders that women in today's business climate are and can continue to be. And it's really meant to be an inspiration for them to then go and start their own businesses or enter into a further leadership role within their corporation or what have you. And so that was the message that was a fit for that time. And I think all of the books I wrote after Your Mailbox is Full really were looking for, you know, what's the message that needs to be sent today? And then writing the book that provides that message. So, you know, at first it was really writing the book for, I wrote Your Mailbox is Full really for what I wanted to share. And then the rest of the books I've written is what they needed to hear, so much so than what I necessarily wanted to write about.
All right, then why in the world are you qualified to write about female entrepreneurs? It seems to me that, and I'll give you the fact that you did have a female co-author, Emily Espy, but still, that's a little bit sexist. Here I am as a man, I'm going to tell females how to be entrepreneurial. Some feminists may not like that.
Well, the premise of the book is not so much that I tell you what to do. The premise of that book specifically is here's a whole bunch of extraordinary women who have done it. And then let me tell you their story. Let me tell you how they've done it. I'm not going to give you the secrets. I'm not going to give you the tools. I don't know them as a, you know, I'm a male. I'm an author. I don't necessarily know how you as a woman should become an entrepreneur or a small business executive or a thought leader or a leader in your corporation. But I can tell you the stories of those that do. And if you can hear those stories in a way that matches your experience, that matches where you're coming from today, then you're going to have a different perspective walking away from that.
Well, that makes sense. I like that. And who are the females that you cover in the book?
Gosh, we cover so many different females from, you know, leadership executives in major corporations to PR, you know, individual small business PR firm, you know, people who have founded small businesses, people who have founded medium-sized businesses, and people who are emerging in a large-scale corporation. You know, there's so many different ways for females in business to take on a higher level, a higher role, and there's a lot of room for females to emerge in that way. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity for women in the marketplace today. You know, and certainly we're seeing that across all different elements and all different industries and business.
All right. Now, in your role as the founder of Motivational Press, I am obsessed with the listeners publishing a book, getting out there and becoming a thought leader and the entire shtick, right? We've all heard this 1,000 times. As the guy making the decision or someone responsible for the people making the decision, Justin, tell me about the perfect author, new author that comes to you and says, I want to write a book. Tell me the dream scenario. What does that author say? What have they done in preparation? Give me the dream package.
Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are absolutely the dream clients in the marketplace right now. You know, we just heard that Donald Trump released a new book as part of his campaign. And so, you know, certainly the more media exposure we can get, the more attention we can get to any title is the dream client. So what does that look like for the normal author? I think the simple answer is the more platform in today's marketplace, the better off you're going to be. So you want to be building your social media community. You want to be speaking at your local communities, at networking functions, at meetup groups, and start building that platform. Really get out there. The more people you're exposed to on a consistent basis, the better off you're going to be, and the more attractive you're going to be to a publisher.
Do you ever look at clout score or anything like that? You mentioned social media. Do you... are you more excited if someone's got 100,000 Twitter followers or a huge Instagram? How far do you take that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, look, numbers certainly matter as far as social media goes. And if you had no social media following whatsoever, but you were speaking in your local community, you know, 1 to 2 times a week, which would I prefer? I'd probably prefer the person speaking 1 to 2 times a week. But then there's the other side of, you know, are you in the media? Are you being interviewed in your local newspaper or in national media or what have you? I mean, we look very much at the holistic package, very much at who you are as a whole, as a thought leader on a large scale, much more so than do we look necessarily at your individual your individual social media profile or any one thing. No one thing is going to make or break you.
And then how important is the title, the thesis, the topic, all of that kind of stuff? You didn't even mention that, Justin.
Is it important? Yes. Is it going to make or break you? Not necessarily. And the reason I say that is simply because for authors today, the publisher is going to help you craft the best title. The publisher is going to help you create the marketing plan. The publisher is going to help you to create the table of contents that sells the book the best. And so is your content important? Yes, it has to be. I mean, it's either a hit or miss. It's not necessarily this gets an 8 out of 10. Or, you know, it's either this is good content or this is not good content. And then the next question is, how do we package it effectively to make that really work and to make that really sell?
Okay. And this is a stupid question. I've got to admit that, but I need to ask it. Motivational Press, are you mostly interested in motivational books, or have you grown way past that now?
Yeah, we have grown past it. We do all kinds of nonfiction work. I don't do vampires. I don't do fantasy novels, but I do anything nonfiction. And the basis for our decisions is this going to help people in their lives today? Is this going to help them, you know, take their lives to whatever's next for them? And if the answer is yes, then we're there 100% every time.
What kind of parents did you have? The reason I ask this is I have a friend whose father was a motivational speaker in the 80s, and he grew up where the father said, I don't care what your grades are. Hell, I don't even care if you go to school, but I want you to read this book by Brian Tracy or, you know, some of the incredible speakers from the 20s and 30s, you know, people like that, Og Mandino. What kind of parents did you have? And now that you're getting married, and I'm sure your wife is pestering you to get her pregnant within the next 5 years, because that's the way they are. What kind of parent do you want to be, Justin? Are you going to care about grades? Because I bet you that you've now learned that grades have nothing to do with long-term success.
Well, I'll tell you, my dad's a doctor, so you know he went the traditional education route. And so he very much cares about the education. And I think for me, you know, becoming a parent myself, I think I absolutely think that how a student does, how a child does in elementary school and middle school, it shapes them in a certain way, and it can't be the only thing. To build a well-rounded individual in today's society, you can't just expect that the school systems are going to do it, because I can tell you they're not. But ultimately, it's good groundwork, and I think it's important to start there. And of course, you know, I think my kids are going to have to do exceptionally well in school, but they're also going to have to, you know, focus a lot more attention on learning a foreign language than the schools require. They're going to have to focus on, you know, some of those critical extracurricular activities that, you know, if you read Inc. magazine or you read Fast Company or any of the magazines, they've been talking a lot lately about some of the most important things to exercise your brain and get you to be a creative thinker. And what they talk about is learning a foreign language, learning to play a musical instrument, and you know, and doing the brain teasers that you see on all these iPhone and Android apps. You know, they say if you exercise your brain in a different way, you're going to be able to think more critically. Our schools teach you to think linearly, which is critically important. You need to be able to think, but you need to be able to think creatively just as much as you need to be able to think linearly, and that's not something our schools teach.
Did you go to college, Justin?
For about 2 weeks.
And how did your father respond when you told him that you weren't going to do that anymore?
Well, you know, it's funny. He says, you're going to be a college dropout. I said, no, I just left, because to be a dropout, you actually have to sign papers. But I literally got on a plane and went home. So it's, you know, it's kind of a different story for me. But ultimately, I think where I was is I was taking marketing classes where they were talking about buying and selling radio and television and print media ads. And I was saying, well, let's see here. We're in the age of social media, you know, and anyone who's buying ads on radio instead of buying Facebook ads is way behind in their marketing and advertising initiatives. And so for me, it was like, you're not even talking about the things that are really mattering in today's market. So why am I here? I can go learn it by doing it much more effectively than will I ever sitting in this classroom hearing you talk about something that's age-old wisdom in marketing.
It must be hard having the background that you did listening to a 50-year-old professor talking about something that's 100 years old.
Oh, it certainly did. You know, they say those who can't do teach.
And those who can't teach administrate teachers. So let me just finish that. And, you know, I was a university professor for 9 years, Justin. So I am very familiar with this.
Yeah. You know, I think the best teachers are those that are still doing it, you know, because even in this industry, you find there are people that they did it 10 years ago when they were starting their business, but now they have a whole team around them. They don't do it themselves. And when you start listening to them talk about some of the strategies, actually having done it myself now in my business and you know, other business owners have done the same, find that they're 5 years old in their marketing and in their wisdom and in their strategies, and they're trying to teach people how to do this. Well, I'm sorry, but what's working today isn't what worked 5 years ago.
Do you have any desire, and I do not mean this in any sort of a negative way or pejoratively or anything like that, but do you have any desire to build a business in trucking or restaurants or Not related to media and self-improvement or anything like that. But if someone came to you with a really interesting investment and said, but Justin, we want you to run the thing and we want to start a paving company. And it's going to innovate paving more than anything that happened in the paving industry in the last 200 years. But you have, or we want you to run an energy company or a healthcare company. Do you have any interest in doing that? Or are you on your path?
Well, I think it depends on the company. I mean, I certainly would be interested in taking a larger role in a more, in a large scale corporation. I think it would allow me a lot more opportunity to impact. But I will say that there's two requirements for me. First is that we have to be influencing and serving the audience at a high level. I don't think a paving company is not right for me, but as a healthcare company, if I can make a difference, absolutely. But with that being said, what I know about today's market is you have to be able to change fast. No matter how big of a company you are, you have to be able to move at a quick pace. The only thing that's kept us alive as a publishing house against the top publishing houses in the world is our ability to innovate and change our strategies very quickly when the big publishers take 5 years to change their strategies. And so, what I know is that if I was ever to lead a major corporation, which, I've been offered a couple, and I certainly would consider, a major corporation if it came, you have to be able to innovate, you have to be able to move quickly, and you have to be able to change with the times. And a lot of times, companies on a large level are struggling to innovate. One of our authors talks about what it took to create the mission to the moon. He was actively engaged with NASA and helping them to create those different components. And what he talks about is our corporations are not prepared to be able to innovate at the level that they need to. And most of them are focusing on management rather than innovation. And if they focused on innovation, their revenues would skyrocket.
I published a book about 4 years ago with McGraw-Hill, and it took them over a year to get it out. And one of my big frustrations, especially as I look at publishing something next, I don't want to write a book on social media and then have some publisher take a year to get it out. That's going to kill the book, right?
Right.
What do you think that motivational press does differently that makes it better than a old-timey publishing house?
Well, first of all, we move very quickly. Our books are released within 3 to 6 months. So that is usually the time it takes to build up the marketing momentum. But what really makes us different is the top five, top 10 publishers in today's market, they're looking for authors that have a huge platform today. We help our authors build that platform. We don't expect that you're going to come to us being Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. Trust me, if you do, I'm not going to say no. But but we don't expect that that's going to happen. And so the authors that we work with are emerging. They're on their way to becoming established, and we help them through that process. We help them identify what the next path forward is and what makes the most sense for them. Those are not easy things to work through, especially in today's times.
Oh, very well said. 3 to 6 months, that's very impressive for a big house like what you have, so I'm very impressed. And Justin, I just love everything about you, your attitude, your ability to give back to others, your insistence on making a difference. And again, congratulations on the marriage. It will be the most enjoyable thing you ever do in your life, I am sure. How can people find you on social media, follow you, learn more from you? Oh, I forgot to mention the magazine that just came out, the Motivational Press magazine. How can we get involved in all things Justin Sack?
You can find me on Facebook, of course. You can also find us at motivationalpress.com. And of course, we're always looking for new authors. And that's our core focus.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Justin. I hope you have a wonderful honeymoon. And I hope you never think of me on your honeymoon.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
We're out of time, but back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Bye now.